Minds of the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station we're listening to. And they happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. We're going to ask that you hold your calls for the time being. We have with us today Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief. We're going to be talking about what's going on in the world today from his perspective. And I will tell you, if you do not go to his website, worldaffairsbrief.com, and get the daily commentaries that listed there, the summaries of some of the most amazing articles. You really don't know what's going on in the world. And if you read the New York Times and the Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal, why, you're not getting the truth about what's going on. So without further ado, Joel, thanks very much for being with us again.
It's always a pleasure, Dr. Stan.
Well, what are the major issues this week?
Well, in light of your introduction, we have another story where we're not getting the real truth. This is the Canadian terror story that is making the rounds about the big bust on this. Well, they're claiming basically that a lot of Muslim terrorists were planning to use a fertilizer bomb like Timothy McVeigh and blow up some major Canadian building. Well, not only did the, quote, terrorists in Canada not have a target for their so-called fertilizer bomb, the fertilizer itself was part of a sting operation. In other words, the RCMP, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, in a sting operation, had gotten a hold of some young, and I'm talking teenagers in a Muslim, talked them into doing something radical, told them how to do it, sold them the explosives, and then arrested them as if this were a great big Al-Qaeda group. This is just a sham. I mean, you can talk teenagers who have a little bit of resentment into almost anything.
And, of course, that's what they did with the Lodi, Muslim cell there. They got one guy, some older man, took him under his wing and did everything he could to incite him and had him go off to Pakistan. We see the same technique used over and over again. The agent provocateur, because there just isn't that much terrorist activity in the United States, so they've got to create it.
Well, there isn't any terrorist activity, Dr. Stan. I don't even consider anymore 9/11 legitimate terrorism. If we had legitimate terrorism, we, with open borders like we have, we would simply have terrorists wandering across every other day, throwing explosives, electrical pylons at railroad tracks, in shopping malls, and car bombs. We have nothing with open borders. I mean, who are we to believe that Al-Qaeda, the most powerful organization and wealthy organization of terrorism in the world, simply can't walk across the border and do any act? No, sir. We do not have terrorism here. And all of the evidence in 9/11 points to simply a government-led operation. It's far too complex. The bringing down of the World Trade Center with the demolitions is very, very powerful in its evidence now. We still have a complete cover-up on the aircraft that flew into the Pentagon in terms of the video. It's a tremendous amount of dispute there. There is a new video out called Loose Change, and it's available on the Internet. Even Google has it on their video collection. Don't even have to buy it. It's got, even though it has four or five significant errors, in my opinion, nevertheless, it has the best litany of first-hand interviews of people who dispute the, including firemen and policemen who dispute the official version of events. It's worth everyone seeing.
All right, fine. Well, I think that there's no question at all. We have not gotten the truth. And I simply point to the two miraculous or miracle passports that survived coming down to building number 7. There's just no way that building number 7 could have come down unless, of course, there are internal explosions. And how many people think that Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda snuck into the basement of the building where the FBI and the CIA were housed and put explosives in there in preparation for the coming of the 9/11 attack? And if you believe that, why, you've got to be incredibly naive. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. And our guest this afternoon is Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief. And Joel was simply talking about the so-called Toronto terrorist cell, where they had a number of kids who'd apparently, come under the influence of an agent provocateur, who managed to inflame these Muslim youths into the hatred of, and of making all sorts of statements, and even taught them how to build this bomb. And, but this was simply another example of infiltrating the Muslim movement and, of course, inciting violence. And you get paid very well. You go in there as a Muslim agent provocateur, you can make hundreds of thousands of dollars. And, in fact, we had the Mr. Salem back in 1993 who made, I think, $3 million from the FBI, but working within the Muslim group. So this is very profitable, isn't it?
It is. It's incredibly disingenuous how the RCMP handled this news conference, which happened yesterday morning. They displayed a sample of ammonium nitrate, a crude cell phone detonator, all of which they said were seized in a massive police sweep where 17 were taken into custody. They made no mention whatsoever that everything that agent was holding in his hand was provided by the police. You know, it's just incredible not to make a mention of that, you know, as if we raided this house and look what we found, as if you didn't know it was there. Well, what's interesting is that they were also making a lot of charges that there was some large chemical attack using cyanide that was going to be found. And yet they haven't found any of the cyanide at the house where they were supposedly going to raid. And one person was killed in that raid, by the way, and they didn't find anything. So these things are botched up, covered up, and I'm afraid it's more of what we're talking about. If you don't have real legitimate terrorism, these anti- or counter-terrorist organizations, which are part of the black side of these operations, create them if they need to. The same things happened in Britain. We had another major raid, and it's turning out that the evidence is has been manufactured as well. This is very, very difficult to for the government to, I think, defend, other than the fact that the media doesn't tell all that we're discussing today.
I think we only have to look in the IRA, where we found the number two man in the Irish Republican Army, the wicked Irish Republican Army, that was, of course, bombing Great Britain and threatening Parliament. He was a British agent. The chief terrorist and a torturer and a murderer of the IRA was a British agent. I mean, where is the outcry from the people of Great Britain? If they could do it there, could they do it here?
Of course, he's dead now. The IRA assassinated him.
We'll be back in just a moment with Joel Scott. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief. And if you doubt what I'm saying, we can actually get the documentation on the story that two men, key people in the Irish Republican Army, the wicked Irish Republican Army, threatening the stability of Great Britain, were themselves British agents. Go ahead, Joel.
Well, you mentioned, we talked about the dark side activities, and these are... dark side doesn't really mean just secret. It means secret and illegal. In other words, these are things the government isn't supposed to be doing. These are things covering up for government illegal acts, acts of terrorism, acts of importation of drugs. Vice President Dick Cheney foretold in a very interesting statement the pervasive secrecy that this administration is dealing in. He said, and I quote, "We also have to work the dark side. We've got to spend time in the shadows." Well, you see, these people understand, you know, my terminology. This isn't just something from our critical point of view. These people know that there's a dark side and a white side, and they know that the two don't mix. And the people on the white side will swear up and down. They would know, because we work for the CIA, we work for the NSA. We would know if there's a dark side. And I say to them, no, you wouldn't know. They have to have a need to know. It's a matter of national security. Keep these secrets covered up, even from legitimate agents. So that's the problem we're dealing with. This is a conspiracy at a micro level, in the sense that there are legal acts that agents don't see the big picture for. And then on the bigger picture, I believe very strongly there's a conspiracy to take down and destroy national sovereignty and to impose upon the entire world a globalist new world order, and that will be done through the instrumentality of larger and larger wars and a major war of retaliation, which I believe is coming up in the next decade. Now, the triggers for that war will either be in the Middle East or in the Far East. You have two ticking time bombs going on there. It's constantly going off in the Middle East, but Taiwan and South and North Korea are also potential triggers for a much larger retaliatory war when the real axis of evil, Russia and China, are intending to do a preemptive nuclear strike on America. it's very interesting to watch, and we covered in last week's World Affairs Brief, as you might recall on our interviews, Kissinger, Henry Kissinger, having knowingly betrayed not only South Vietnam at the end of the Vietnam War, agreed to essentially let China have full reign in the Far East, and then to betray Taiwan, indicating we would never accept an independent Taiwan, and essentially giving China the go-ahead to continue their hegemony in that area.
And I think for our listeners who did not actually read that World Affairs Brief, it was based upon some archives that actually, I don't know, thousands and thousands of pages of archives of actually the papers that were recorded at the time of the Paris Peace Conference, when, of course, Kissinger made, and, of course, of his meetings, I think, with the Chinese communists, well, over in China, wasn't it, when he met with Zhou Enlai?
That's correct. This was in 1971 and 1972. The papers of his betrayal of Taiwan came out in 1971. Happened in 1971, and they came out in 2003. And I reported on that in the World Affairs Brief. And then just 2 weeks ago, the National Security Archives of George Washington University. Now, this is not to be confused with the National Records and Archives Administration, from which they got their information. They do Freedom of Information Act requests to try to break through the wall of secrecy, and when they are declassified, they, you know, give out some of this information. We got the whole transcripts now. Kissinger said, "Oh, we didn't talk about Taiwan very much at all," and yet, you know, in total, with all the betrayals and all of the transcripts of the Kissinger years, they're totaling 28,000 pages. Researchers are still sifting through this amount of material, and they're finding some real gems, things that are confirming what we have been charging for many years, in that there is a very deliberate destruction of American sovereignty, of liberty, through these people. And it's not because they are right-wing capitalists enhanced by greed. These are globalists, in my opinion.
And, of course, I believe that there's a spiritual motivation behind these people which causes them to betray our country. And, of course, they're covered by the media, who is controlled by people who all belong to this same globalist clique whose dedication and loyalty is not to America but to this globalist dream of the New World Order and the New World Religion. Would you agree?
I would. You know, the evidence that, photographic and otherwise, that Alex Jones and a few others have gotten out of the Bohemian Grove. This is a very exclusive all-male club in the north in the Santa Rosa area of north of San Francisco, and I mean, there's some very satanic cult-like ceremonies that go on here, and the big boys are all there: presidents, their counselors, world leaders, industrialists, businessmen. In fact, some of the stuff is very, very embarrassing, and it's highly guarded. But there have been a few, you know, photographers get in there and explain a little bit about what they're doing.
And, of course, we actually, there's Alexandra Robbins, who wrote a book, The Secrets of the Tomb, about the Skull and Bones, describes very, very similar ceremonies. I mean, you know, the black capes and the black hoods and the candles and the pagan chanting sounds just like what goes on up there at the Bohemian Grove, what Stanley Kubrick described in his movie, Wise Wide Shut. But Stanley Kubrick never lived to actually see that, you know, distributed. He died before it was ever distributed.
Well, I'm not sure that these books that have been published on about Skull and Bones and others really give the full picture.
I don't think they do, but there was just one thing in Alexandra Robbins' book where she described one person who witnessed this wedding, Skull and Bones' wedding. It was the only thing in the book, I think, that was really accurate. And when I asked Alexandra about the description of these people in the black robes and the hoods, didn't that really bother you? And she hesitated for a moment, and she said, "Well, yes, that really did bother me," but she didn't want to dwell on it.
Well, you know, I've listened to interviews of Ms. Robbins, and I'm convinced that she was simply selected because she's a little bit naive, wasn't a real intense investigative reporter that she would take what was given to her and write a book, you know, without asking any further questions.
Oh, I agree with you. I think this is the one thing in her book and the one thing in my interview with her, which really did give us some intimation that there are the real occult background between Skull and Bones. The rest of it was simply pap, and I agree with you, it was disinformation put out by the Skull and Bones, because after all, you know, when you see two presidential candidates, George Bush and John Kerry, both belonging to the secret occult organization, so secret that neither one of them would discuss it. Some naive Americans might even think that there was some sort of a conspiracy out there.
Well, you know, there's something else that's happening in the international arena in Taiwan now. There's a movement afoot now to undermine the Taiwanese president, Chen. Chen Shui-bian is how you really pronounce it, is being pressed to resign 2 days after Chen announced he would relinquish some of his own power to his cabinet. He's really trying to defuse a problem where his son got him into trouble, and he may well have been involved in this, but it was a matter of campaign contributions and some other problems. Chen has been the burr in the side of the United States for many years, trying to promote Taiwanese independence, and I think they really want him out of there now, and so there's a growing movement there to get him out, and it may well be that his son was enticed into some of these indiscretions in order to undermine his ruling Democratic Progressive Party. It's interesting that the opposition Kuomintang, the KMT, the original Nationalist Party that broke away from Mao Zedong, or actually escaped from China under Mao Zedong, when the George Marshall State Department essentially cut off all his military funding and caused him to lose the war with Mao. They turned quite liberal, in fact, and started to play down independence, started to play games with the communists. So they finally had been, I think, turned, and that's what created the Chen's Democratic Progressive Party to take the banner of independence. So there's been an ongoing move in Parliament there in Taiwan for the Kuomintang to take power back. I think that they do want a peaceful transition, and even Chen has gone along with that to a certain extent by allowing an extreme amount of capital to leave Taiwan, billions of dollars per year, to go, and the Taiwanese now are hiring the Chinese to do their manufacturing for them. So this will put Taiwan very much at risk in a confrontation, because much of their manufacturing capability will have been gone overseas, just like the United States has done. So we're seeing that the world has very, very little understanding of the Chinese ability foresee how to sucker the West into a trap of dependency, not to mention the fact that all our funds are going towards China, allowing it to have the largest arms buildup of any nation in the world.
But don't you think we are intentionally creating the best enemy money could buy? In other words, we are funding this whole massive industrialization of communist China and transferring them the military technology, both as far as the missiles are concerned and other things, so that they can build up a military in preparation for the coming war?
Well, I do believe that that's ultimately what's happening. It's a touch-and-go game. They've got to be careful how fast they allow them. They have to dovetail with Russia, who is the trigger man with its weapons of mass destruction. So it's a very complex aspect, but you're right. We are building our own enemy and covering for Russia, who has already built up and is slowly improving its position in nuclear weapons.
But, of course, this really doesn't make sense unless you study the Second World War and how we, of course, finance the militarization of Hitler's Germany. And as wicked as Adolf Hitler was, we were transferring the technology. We were building up his war machine with 100 American corporations to Germany, who couldn't even make a profit. If you doubt that, I have a letter that Ambassador Dodd wrote to Colonel House in 1936 saying, why are we building up, American corporations building up Adolf Hitler's Germany? Well, go ahead, Joel.
The interesting thing that happens is, I disagree with some of the conservative point of view that believes And my uncle believed this for many years, and we finally came to a meeting of the minds before he died last January. But many of the conservatives had believed that this globalist Anglo-Saxon conspiracy that controls the New World Order actually controls Russia completely, and that Russia is just a puppet, and that's why there won't be nuclear war, because Russia is a completely controlled entity. And I do not believe that. I believe that they facilitate the growth of communism. They facilitate communist revolutions around the world because it breaks down the traditional world order, it breaks down capitalism, and creates conflict so that the globalists can come in and rescue nation by nation in the world, as we're seeing in Iraq, with their globalist units. In any case, I think it's very, very important to understand that part of the strategy of the globalists, you see, the risk, I should say, in their strategy is that when you build up an enemy as strong as potentially what China could be, or even what Russia could be with its vastly superior stockpile of nuclear weapons and missiles, that how do you win a war when you build up an enemy? You know, Hitler was a very powerful enemy to overcome. Russia and China will be much, much more difficult. So I think it's important that we understand that the Anglo-American establishment fomented and helped create the seeds of destruction within the enemy by building up two predator nations at the same time. They were financing and building up the Soviet Union as well as Hitler, and those people were in a non-aggression pact to start World War II. But the powers that be knew that Russia and China, one or the other, would attack the other sometime during the war because they were co-predators, and they knew that they had to take down the other in order to come out on top. Now, Russia was intending, in its own good time, to attack Hitler. Hitler beat him to the punch. A lot of people don't understand that when Hitler crossed the border and headed into Russia, he found much evidence that Russia was already building up the arms for an attack on Hitler, and they have many spies to confirm that. And I think the Anglo-American establishment is using the same strategy in fomenting allowing to build up both Russia and China, knowing that they both have predator mentalities. I think during this next World War III, that's how the Anglo-American establishment intends to win, by in fact allowing China to betray Russia sometime during the war, will attack Russia's rear, and then Russia will cease to be able to win that war with China at its rear. Anyway, that's my theory, and I think that's what we're going to see happen, but time will tell.
That certainly is. Well, I think we're moving into extremely dangerous times, and I don't think the average American really understands the potential. You know, we're not going to be able to sit across the oceans and say, well, there's a war, but isn't it too bad about what's happening to Europe, or isn't it too bad what's happening to Japan, or isn't it too bad about what's happening to China? Because I think we will certainly be involved in this, the availability of intercontinental ballistic missiles, and of course the way that, of course, we're transferring the missile technology to both Russia and to China so that they can MIRV their missiles so they can target our cities. Doesn't make sense, but so much of what's going on doesn't make sense unless maybe there is a spiritual force behind this whole thing that is energizing the leaders on both their side and our side. And we're going to be back in just a moment here with Joel Skousen. Well, Joel, you go ahead and pick the story up there.
Well, I'm going to move on to Iraq now. In a very, very sad commentary, the U.S. ended up clearing U.S. soldiers of killing civilians in several of these massacres that have occurred recently, and so Iraq, frankly, is up in an uproar about this. America's alliance with this new Iraqi government of Prime Minister Maliki has been plunged into a major crisis as the people were reacting with fury. Now, the press has not been covering this, the fury and the demonstrations in Iraq about U.S. military clearing its forces of killing civilians during operations against insurgents. In fact, of course, we know about the one in Haditha that occurred last year in November that was delayed 4 months before it ever hit the press. But there have been two or three other very egregious killing of civilians, and those soldiers have been cleared, including the one which was even caught on video of NBC of a soldier yelling and cursing at a wounded, unarmed soldier found in a sweep through there, and then he just shot him. And, you know, that soldier was exonerated as well. So this is very, very bad. I happen to have mentioned in my brief last week a commentary which I thought was going to be very controversial. I said, going back to my experience as an officer in the Marine Corps, I said, you know, I'm very, very concerned because even in the late 70s when I was in the winding down of the Vietnam War and working with troops, there were basically two types of people that were coming into the Marine Corps. Either were people who didn't have anything better to do in life, were essentially dropouts of high school, dropouts out of society, and just were kind of lost, couldn't get a good job, and so they joined the military as the easy way out. Or there were people who had something big in their ego to show. And you have people wanting to become the best, the brawniest, the super elite soldier in this image. Both of those types are very, very prone to making a lot of moral mistakes. And that's what I think that we're seeing here, is we're seeing a great deal of carousing. There's a lot of moral corruption. There's a lot of filthy language. There's a lot of peer pressure. There's a lot of goading people to do things. And so I said, you know, it doesn't surprise me at all that we're having these types of trigger-happy soldiers just mowing civilians down and shooting babies in the head. They don't exercise conscience, you know, during peace times, let alone when the stress really gets high. And I had, interestingly enough, a couple of comments coming back from my World Affairs brief with from other officers who have been serving in Iraq. Here's a U.S. field grade officer. He's requested anonymity because obviously he does not want to. He knows what the military will do if you end up agreeing with me or telling his own experience. But here's what he said. Mr. Scowls and I served in Fallujah with the Marines. You are correct in your assessment of the quality of Marines I served with. The large majority were as you described. I observed drug abuse, alcohol abuse, sexual abuse, disrespect of senior officers by young enlisted, thievery, general disorder among the troops. For, quote, elite troops in a very forward combat zone, discipline was lax in the extreme. Coming from an Army background, I was surprised at the level of unprofessionalism and general incompetence that I witnessed with the Marine Corps. And, you know, this is very sad, but that's why I, with great reluctance, say I'm not, don't give blanket support our troops. These people, and there are some very outstanding exceptions to these people, I don't wish to paint all military people in this group, but I'm talking, frankly, Dr. Stan, about the majority. The majority are a low-class or a hyped-up ego individual. And they don't need more ethics training. You know, that was the response of the United States. We're going to put them all through an ethics course. I mean, this was relativity training. It's incredible when you read the manuals written by these psychologists. It just confuses the troops. They won't sit down there and talk about this is illegal and this is not legal. It's a bunch of sensitivity and relativity training. So I'm very, very disturbed about the military's, as I predicted in the World Affairs brief, saying, yes, we're going to have more ethics training. And that's what their answer is.
All right. Well, I think everybody should be concerned about what's going on over there because this is a reflection on America. And if American troops, wantonly kill civilians, they should be held responsible for it. But apparently our leaders don't really want to do anything about it. And of course, this then is the image of Christian America being spread throughout the world today. What a tragic commentary. The stories of Abu Ghraib, the stories of torture, and not all of this is left-wing hype. I think much of this is very real. Because, of course, America is a country that no longer has a moral foundation. We don't teach morality in our schools. We don't teach right and wrong. We sure don't teach fear of God. In fact, we don't teach anything about God at all. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Joel Scowls. And Joel, pick the story up there, please.
Well, I'd like to move on over to East Timor now. East Timor, if your listeners remember, was a major peacekeeping operation. This is an island country, or half of an island country, a divided island right above Australia. Now, it's considered in Australia's realm of influence. But when the United Nations moved in to East Timor, they moved in order to stop the Indonesian army from suppressing the Frelimo so-called democratic movement. The Frelimo movement, in fact, is a communist insurgency. This is another example of the UN stepping in to save a communist insurgency. They did, in fact, install Frelimo as the legitimate government. They've been ruling ever since, and now it's broken down. That's why 1,300 Australian troops have moved in there. And the breakdown is typical of what happens with communist revolutionaries. You have factionalism within the communist side itself. You have two or three splinter groups that have taken off and have taken up arms against Frelimo. And then you have, of course, your normal peasant who is fed up with the suppression of the land reform, which ends up being land confiscation for any of the productive land in East Timor. And essentially the economy has been destroyed. Frelimo, the Prime Minister, Mr. Al-Khatiri, who is a communist, has been holding talks with Foreign Minister from Australia, Mr. Downer. Foreign Minister of Frelimo is José Ramos Horta. And in essence, they're trying to keep Frelimo in power, and they're having to use Australian troops to do it. And this is a very sad commentary, because in the media, you just never hear that Frelimo has a communist background. In fact, whenever you have any of the countries in Africa have major revolutionary activity, you never tell what side of the political spectrum they're on.
I really think that's so true, and so often you read the commentaries and you say, well, who are the good guys and the bad guys, and then you quickly forget that you have no idea who the communists are, who the anti-communists are, who those who are in favor of freedom and those in favor of tyranny.
That's right. In another subject, it's interesting how we're watching now how the various mercenary armies that the United States is building tend to morph. The largest used to be DynCorp. DynCorp has its scandals. It was bought out two or three times. And there have been several others. One of the up-and-coming ones is...
Hold that thought for just a moment. We'll be right back as we bring our other stations right back on board here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief. And before we get into the mercenary armies that we are having here, and believe me, the American government is hiring mercenary armies, but I want Joel to have an opportunity to tell our listeners how to get in touch with World Affairs Brief and perhaps how to subscribe to the weekly commentary, which I get and look forward to every Friday. Go ahead, Joel.
The World Affairs Brief is my weekly analysis of the news. I do this every; it comes out every Friday by email. There is a modest subscription price. It's probably one of the cheapest in all of the Internet for a weekly analytical political service. You can go to my website, www.worldaffairsbrief.com, and find out everything you need to know. You can see the daily news summaries that scroll down and find out what the top stories are each day. And then on Friday, I analyze those each week. You can look into the archives, find out some of my past analysis. You can go to the right-hand column of the website and see my analysis of many of the cover-ups and omissions of truth that the media and our government have been involved in over the years. There's a tremendous amount of information on the website, and so I encourage people to go to www.worldaffairsbrief.com.
All right, and of course, at present time, there is no telephone number, so just go to World Affairs Brief, and if you have any problem, you can always call our 800 number, and we'll try to put you in touch with them. Anyway, pick up the story there from Joel. You were talking about the mercenary armies. Now, most Americans do not understand. There are literally tens of thousands of American mercenaries serving, certainly, in Iraq today, and probably in other places throughout the world, aren't there?
That's right, and it's interesting. This is really big business. You know, these people have no bid contracts from the U.S. government. These people are always You know, you don't just start a mercenary company, you or I. You can't walk up to the ATF and say, I want a license to have rocket launchers and automatic weapons and machine guns and grenades and those types. I mean, they look at you like you're crazy. And yet these people get those kinds of permits because they have a government contract in hand. How do they get that government contract? Well, they're former special forces. They've got buddies in the military and in the Bush administration. For example, let's look at Blackwater. Blackwater's in the news because it's, instead of MPRI and DynCorp, which used to be the big boys on the block, Blackwater now, what a name, by the way, is into everything from Hurricane Katrina disaster relief. They're getting into charity work as well. I heard an interview on NPR with the head of Blackwater talking about why are you getting into charitable endeavors, and what they really want to do is be the private security people for the American Red Cross, for any aid in societies that go overseas into areas where their aid workers might be at risk. They want Blackwater to be hired as their security and eventually to get involved in supplying the aid itself. And the Blackwater was saying, well, you know, wars won't be around forever. We've got to be able to keep our people employed even during peacetime, and so that's why they're so-called diversifying. But it's very interesting that all of a sudden, when there supposedly isn't enough money to pay the poor victims of some of these hurricane type of things, you have Blackwater security people coming in at hundreds and thousands of dollars per day, and it's really an insult. You have people you know, having their weapons confiscated by other private guards like Blackwater. Blackwater, a few years ago, essentially was almost unknown. The company was founded by a what the press calls a right-wing fundamentalist Christian, former Navy SEAL by the name of Eric Prince. Well, Prince is you know, one of the right-wing fundamentalist Christians in the shadow of George Bush type fundamentalist Christian, which I don't consider to be of the same caliber as you, Dr. Sands.
No, I hope not.
So it started as early as the 1990s. It was going to train law enforcement and supplement the work of the U.S. military. And, of course, by supplement meaning you do black ops, illegal operations the U.S. doesn't want to get caught doing. And when the Bush administration took power after September 11th, the company just exploded with no bid contracts. Blackwater was awarded a prize contract in Iraq to provide security for the original head of the U.S. occupation, Paul Bremer. And at the time, that was a paltry $21 million contract. You know, you think about the numbers here, Dr. Stan. You got a contract to protect Paul Bremer, one person, and the contract's for $21 million.
Well, Paul Bremer is very important. After he worked for Kissinger and Associates, he was the man who betrayed the people of Iraq and destroyed the army and the police and created the chaotic situation that exists there today. I think Paul Bremer did an excellent job in Iraq of laying the groundwork for the civil war that's there. So I can see why they'd want to protect him. He is certainly one of the ruling elite of America.
Well, of course, it mushroomed from taking care of Paul Bremer to providing security in almost all the entire green zone later on, and now they're making billions of dollars. The day after, it was, by the way, four Blackwater contractors that were ambushed and killed in the city of Fallujah, which eventually led to the strategic bomb. It was the one that was associated with House Majority Tom DeLay and Abramoff and all of those people. So you can see the incestuous relationship between these people who have insider no-bid contracts with all of the other corruption that's going on there. But Blackwater is now not just in Iraq and Afghanistan, but they're at home handling Katrina security and many other things as well. So we might ask, what's the real purpose of all of these? You know, these people are paid tremendous wages. The military keeps cutting back on veterans' benefits, doesn't pay our troops enough to keep them in the military, and yet they hire out these mercenaries at nearly $1,000 a day, and they say that we're saving the government money. You know, I just don't believe it. I think that when there's no accountability, there's no public scrutiny, when you have the administration defending these contracts, and then if you try to run an investigation, what do they say? It's a matter of national security. And since these are private contracts, when they make mistakes, when they shoot civilians, how do you bring them to justice?
Professional mercenaries, these are professional killers. And, of course, they're being paid fantastic sums of money, and the question is, why are there so many of them over there in Iraq, and what are they really doing there?
Well, you know, it's not so much that what they're doing there is so secret, although, you know, I will say that they still do illegal acts that the U.S. doesn't want to get caught doing. But let's take their deployment here in the disaster in Katrina. Within days of their being deployed down there, Blackwater was handed a almost $410,000 contract simply to guard a morgue in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. 14 guys, 4 vehicles for 22 days, and they were paid $410,000, Dr. Stan.
Well, that's pretty good money.
It's just ludicrous that the government is doing this contracting spree.
But, of course, they really spend money like a drunken sailor the first day in port. I mean, there is no logic at all. I mean, we're having to borrow between $2 and $3 billion a day just to pay the government's bills.
My opinion on that, Dr. Stan, is the government is going to continue spending with abandon because they know that war is coming, and they're simply going to know that war is going to destroy that debt. When the United States is attacked, and that's the one thing, you know, you say that Americans don't understand that the U.S., not Russia, not China, it's going to be the United States that's going to be attacked. And during that attack, obviously this economy, since it's going to be a nuclear, biological, and chemical attack, will cease to exist for many, many months and perhaps as long as 2 to 3 years. But in any case, that's one thing the federal government is simply spending with abandon. They're inflating with abandon. Amazing to me how the government continues to represent our inflationary rate at 3.5%. It's at least double, could be as much as triple that, almost 10% per year. But of course, in the government basket of goods, they don't drive any cars, they don't buy any gas, they don't buy houses at inflated costs, they don't pay taxes.
And they don't pay health care benefits or drug benefits, and all of these things that are going up so rapidly.
They really are. But anyway, Blackwater, in terms of their inflation, was billing the government $950 per day per man in the hurricane zone. A Blackwater employee told one reporter he was getting paid $350 a day. So now that's $600 the Blackwater gets to play with after they pay their guys. Of course, they have a lot of expensive equipment, but you're right, they are spending with abandon. I think the purpose, frankly, of hiring all of these mercenaries is because when you have the government intending to use the tyrannical powers that they have developed through the Patriot Act and through all of this use of agent provocateurs, it's very difficult to get honest police and military people to go after their own Americans, for not doing anything wrong. We're in essence just simply opposing government or demonstrating against government. But these people, frankly, are quite ruthless. And there is a testing procedure. I mean, they hire some good people. But in essence, they have a hierarchy of cadres within these mercenaries. They have the people who do the most illegal or amoral deals, and those are the ones who are the least principled. Those are the ones who tend to stay and get promoted. And if people are downsized or if there's downsizing going on, people are let go from the jobs. It's the principled people. It's the good people because they want the people who will do the secret, illegal, dark side activities, and that's what Blackwater ultimately is all about, in my opinion.
Well, I certainly agree with you. In fact, I think it was one of the articles, you know, on the WorldNet Daily today talked about how the CIA knew exactly where Adolf Eichmann was. They knew his name, his cover name, but they wouldn't tell anybody about it. Our CIA and our intelligence was covering for Adolf Eichmann. If they would do that, you know, following the Second World War, what would those same spiritual forces that dominate our intelligence be doing today? And are they really concerned about nobility and right and wrong, or would they participate in actions against the American people? And I fear that they will. I think the CIA already, we know, certainly has, you know, been engineering assassinations throughout the world. And of course, if you don't do it yourself, you can always hire professional mercenaries to do those things.
That's right. It's been interesting to watch these revelations over a period of time, Dr. Stan. but I'm convinced it's going to get worse before it's going to get better.
I'd like your thought on the confrontation with Iran. I've talked to a number of very knowledgeable people, and they think that most of this is just sound and fury, that we're going to come to some sort of an accommodation with Iran. They're going to make some concessions. Are there other people who think there's going to be a conflict there? What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, the latest provisions on the table are considered incentives. Incentives are large gifts of money, uranium technology transfers to Iran if they will stop their nuclear production. And, of course, Iran is in no position, although the foreign minister is playing it kind of coolly, saying, well, this is very attractive and it's a very positive sign, but there are still a lot of ambiguities, he's saying. For some reason or another, this particular president, Ahmadinejad, has not shown any propensity to compromise and over this essential prospect. Frankly, I think that Iran is heading for nuclear weapons. They are not a threat to the United States, but they are a threat to Israel. Iran does intend to strike Israel at some time in combination with other Arab countries who are supposedly our allies. So while I think that Iran is a threat to Israel, the U.S. is very clearly, in my opinion, going after Iran as part of the ongoing and antagonism of the Muslim world. And I think that essentially this latest package of incentives is got enough hooks in it, enough ambiguity, enough problem provisions to make sure that it's rejected. It's meant to be looked only positive to the world through the media, so that the U.S. gives the impression to the world that, look, we bend over backwards to give them all these positive incentives. They're looking for a rejection, so that they can justify unilateral action. And even though the Bush administration plays lip service towards going to the United Nations and playing through the Security Council, they always do it in a way that ensures that it'll get rejected, because they really do want unilateral action. The globalists want the U.S. to have the impression that it is a bully in the world. This will help justify the coming war, the retaliation that is inevitably coming.
I mean, the last thing you would think they would want would be some sort of a nuclear attack or even just a plane attack on their nuclear facilities and a disruption of their economy. This doesn't make sense unless perhaps the whole thing is scripted by forces that we really don't understand.
And I think there is some possibility. I cannot imagine anyone as smart as Ahmadinejad would continue to provoke. I mean, he knows, for example, that he's got a line of technology from Russia and China that he could continue to say and play along, yes, we're going to stop our uranium enrichment, knowing that he could get it already enriched from China. If he wanted to, he could get, supposedly, if the relationship is as I understand, completed nuclear weapons from Russia. But it appears to me that Russia is also playing Iran for the sucker. In other words, it may appear that they and the top people, because Ahmadinejad is not really the leader, he's more of a puppet leader. There are powers behind him. And they have chosen, I think, a radical who will not compromise, because in fact Russia intends to sacrifice not only Iraq, which they did. Remember, Iraq was the benefactor of Iraq, militarily speaking, before the war, and they pulled out and didn't defend Iraq other than move their weapons of mass destruction to Syria. And it looks like they're setting up Iran for the attack as well. And it won't have to be a full-scale invasion, which the U.S., frankly, could not handle. But it needs to be, and it probably will be, some massive shock and awe-type air attack, and they may even use nuclear missiles.
And, of course, this will do nothing but inflame the entire Muslim world against the United States.
Yes, that's what I think the ultimate purpose is. For both Russia, you see, they are aligned with this. Russia wants to provoke this war, and the globalist establishment wants to provoke the war.
And so if you look at it from a logical point of view, it doesn't make sense. If you look at it from the point of view that it's all being staged, why, it makes a lot of sense.
Yes, I agree.
All right, we're going to be back here in just a moment. Our guest this afternoon has been Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief. And if you don't go to their website at www.worldaffairsbrief and read those articles every day, you don't have any idea what's going on in the world. So let me suggest that www.worldaffairsbrief and, of course, get the weekly commentary. It's one of the high points of my week. All right, Joel, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, let's cover in the last 3 minutes the Supreme Court's recent decision to cut down on whistleblower rights. You know, the new Bush team on the Supreme Court lost no time last week in cutting back the rights of federal whistleblowers to challenge the punitive punishments they've been receiving for going public with wrongdoing within federal agencies. This was a 5-4 decision, and it was the new boys on the block appointed by the Bush administration that ruled in Garcetti versus Ceballos that, in essence, they didn't have free speech protection. Their category of free speech was outside the protection of the First Amendment because they were employees of the government. And in essence, I think they took the entire wrong view here in their justification here. The issue is whether or not what they're complaining about, you see, if this were just some internal conflict within about efficiency within the CIA, I don't like it because I've been demoted, I've been put on this assignment. But when this is a matter of whistleblowing over something being done illegally, this deserves very special protection. Supreme Court was absolutely wrong in saying that the federal agents have the right to discipline people when it's an internal matter. When it's a matter of illegality, it's no longer an internal matter. It is a matter, I think, of national importance, and they ought to have complete whistleblower protection.
Well, of course, was this one of these things where the liberals were on the right side and the conservatives were on the wrong side?
Absolutely.
And I think that this is the incredible thing. So many people are so grateful that we have Alito and Roberts on the Supreme Court. We may rue the day that they got there.
Well, they're there specifically to uphold government power, especially in the executive branch. And that's what we're seeing happen in this position. And this has got a very chilling effect on whistleblowing because now they know they can be subject to retribution.
And how can we find out what's going on in the government? If the government is planning to take away our freedom, if the government is lying to us, if the government is carrying out criminal activity, and any government employee who tries to tell the truth will be censured and can lose his job, and who else knows what else he may lose. I mean, no man's life, no man's property is safe in America. Joel, we're out of time, but thank you so very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure, and we look forward to having you back sometime next week.
And thank you, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye, and God bless.
Bye.
All right, fine. Joel Skelton of worldaffairsbrief.com, and let me suggest that you're missing out if you don't go to their website, www.worldaffairsbrief.com, where you'll get an overview of what's happening all throughout the world today. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I have to remind you that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we really depend upon those of you who listen to our programs to help us. And if you believe that we have a message and going to give you information you're not going to hear elsewhere, if you believe that we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield, if you believe that the media in the United States is controlled and that most of our conservative and most of our Christian organizations are not giving us accurate information, and if you want a source where we can continue getting the information to you, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, and we hope many of you will join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and support us on a regular basis. It's a hard thing to do what we do. We're really dependent on people. People listen, but they don't want to get involved. They don't want to contribute. They're so conservative, they want to conserve everything they have. Well, believe me, we've done what we've done, and we're on about 60 stations every single week, shortwave internet, satellite, regular radio stations, but we need your help. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like a free copy of one of our newsletters, we'd be glad to send it to you. If you'd like a free catalog of our copy of our health catalog, and we do hope that many of you will decide you're going to, you know, get the various health products that you need through us, and they're competitive prices, but more than that, they simply another means of helping us do what we do, and that is, you know, bring you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, 5 hours every day. And you want to listen to us on 5 hours every day on the Internet? Go to RadioLiberty.com, where you can hear us at 3 hours a day. And then, of course, 1 hour a day on GCNLive.com. 1 hour a day on AmericanNewsNet.com, 1 hour a day now on RBNLive.com, and then 3 hours on RadioLiberty.com. The information is there. You need to get it. If you have not yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it, and or the DVD or VHS. If you want to understand what lies ahead financially, you need to get my talk, either the DVD or the VHS, The Financial Tsunami, and you need to get the syllabus that goes with that. You need to know what to do to protect yourself, because we're on the edge of a financial chasm, and I believe that we're going to see the progressive implosion of our monetary system. Remember, the stability of a society is dependent upon the stability of a currency, and people throughout the world are beginning to lose confidence in the value of the American dollar, the reserve currency of the world. And if the American dollar falters, the whole world falters. And so you, the financial tsunami, the talk, the syllabus, available by calling 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to know about how it was that Fidel Castro took control of Cuba, you have to understand we put him there. And you can hear my interview with Ambassador Earl Smith back in 1980. He was a multi-billionaire who was the American ambassador to Cuba in 1957 and 1958. A very gracious man. We had an opportunity of spending a weekend with him. And you'll hear my interview. Of course, it's uncut. It's basically just exactly as we talk to him. And, of course, as he brings out the fact that we knowingly, the American government, your State Department, brought Fidel Castro to power, knowing he was a communist, one of the best enemies money could buy, just exactly as communist China is the best enemy money could buy. We're doing everything we can to build them up and keep them in power. Why are we doing that? Why? Because you need an enemy. And as Plato had said so well, writing 2,300 years ago in the Republic, when the tyrant has defeated the enemy by treaty or by conquest, and there's nothing to fear from them, then he's always out there scaring up another war so he can rally the people behind him. Could that really go on? Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is www.radioliberty.com. You can pull down my articles there. Or you can get our pamphlet on the history of money, on genetic engineering, on the occult hierarchy. And then please pray for America, pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty.